The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I'm worried about Ben & Jerry's, to be honest. They are a company who have traditionally really been out there in social media. Mm-hmm. And apparently since the 18th of May, they have not tweeted, they have not posted anything on Instagram or Facebook. And I think, as far as I can work out, that this is a lot to do with the fact that they really got attacked during the period of Operation Guardian of the Walls about their presence in Israel. And apparently they had a lot of social media negative comments and harassment because of the fact that they have this factory in Israel and they have quite a strong presence in Israel. Bearing in mind that both Ben and Jerry were two nice Jewish boys from Vermont who actually originally started the company. But apparently they've taken a lot of flack for links to Israel.
Yeah.
And they've been so active on social media, and apparently there's even a new hashtag now, which says, hashtag, has Ben and Jerry's tweeted yet? This is because of their silence on social media. And, you know, they've traditionally taken such a progressive view on all kinds of issues, social issues, and now all of a sudden very silent. So, yeah, it's a little concerning that because of their links to Israel, this is what's going on with Ben & Jerry's. I mean, the Israeli brand of Ben & Jerry's quite famous because they produce all kinds of seasonal flavors, such as charoset flavor for Pesach. And they even had something called, I think, a mixed up flavor during the recent national general election turmoil. I think we can support Ben & Jerry's. I'm personally an ice cream fan, and I don't want to promote any particular brands here or there, but I'm concerned that they're having to suffer.
So it's so interesting because we see this over and over again. Woke culture so often turns on itself in the end because you can't live up to your own standard. It's absolutely impossible. It comes from such a judgmental place of perfection, which of course nobody is. And not only is nobody perfect, but my perfect is different to yours. So you're going to do something ultimately that is going to destroy you. Woke culture eats itself. It's just, you see it over and over again. And this Ben & Jerry's example is an absolutely unsurprising one, because that is what happens, unfortunately. Very interesting, though. Really, really fascinating. Okay, let's just talk about these the fires, obviously, that have been raging in southern Israel yesterday, and of course started by these balloons sent from Gaza. What's the latest there?
Well, unfortunately, you know, there were fires again that broke out yesterday. Lemon fields, acres of lemon fields burnt down, wheat fields as well in the south belonging to kibbutzim. So this is now, you know, the second day in a row that we've had quite serious fires breaking out in southern Israel. Tangerine orchards, really, you know, kibbutz Nir Am in particular was severely hit, with all kinds of citrus orchards burning down and wheat fields and, you know, it's all very, very silent, in the international press in particular, even though this is, you know, a form of economic terrorism, because, unfortunately, even though we do have a Shemitah year coming up and it might be difficult to sell produce, from Israel, and we are supposed to let the land lie fallow for a year. But I mean, this is a very serious, a disaster for that kibbutz and the others around who are suffering from these things. Now, the government, the IDF has not responded this time around to what happened yesterday. And it's not clear exactly what the strategy is moving forward about these incendiary balloons that continue to come over from Gaza. On the one hand, we do know that there is an attempt to try to calm the situation down along the Gaza border. There are talks about a delegation from the new government already planning to go to meet with their Egyptian counterparts in order to somehow try to maneuver towards a longer term peace arrangement along the Gaza border. There's lots of talk. There has been lots of talk about the potential of bringing home those Israelis and the bodies that are still in Gaza as some sort of a swap with Hamas, that it's not clear exactly where all of that stands right now. But the fact is that even though Prime Minister Naftali Bennett did threaten previously that incendiary balloons would be considered as an attack against Israel in the same way as rocket fire is considered to be an attack, and there would be responses to that, on this occasion, as of right now, there's been no IDF response to those incendiary balloons. We will see today whether that serves to somehow calm the situation down rather than fire it up again. There are different ways of dealing with things, because sometimes this tit for tat just creates further violence and further problems. Whereas if one doesn't respond, then, you know, things potentially calm down. So it's not clear exactly where all of this is going right now, but I guess the next day or two will be quite instructive in terms of us getting a feel for where things are heading.
Yeah, crazy and very upsetting situation indeed. A new prosecutor has taken office at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Does this mean anything for Israel? And if so, what?
Well, we hope so. Karim Khan is now the new prosecutor for the International Criminal Court. He's British. He's also Muslim. And some people take some inference from that. I don't know that we can necessarily jump to any early conclusions at this stage about what that might mean for Israel. But I do take heart from one of the references that he made during his inauguration, where he made it clear that he's rather going to try to tackle cases where he has a reasonable chance of getting a judgment and getting success. One of the things that characterized Fatou Bensouda's term as the chief prosecutor at the International Criminal Court was that I think during her 9-year term, she had something like 10 successful prosecutions during all of that time. So a very, very low success rate, one would argue, for the amount of money and effort that's being invested in the International Criminal Court. And not only that, but the importance of the International Criminal Court in upholding standards around the world, and the lack of success in getting prosecutions is really counterintuitive. And what you would like to see is people being held to account more, and the court succeeding so that it can act potentially to prevent people wanting to carry out acts of genocide, war crimes, being more careful in the future. There can be absolutely no doubt that the way that the IDF operates today is entirely different from the way that the IDF used to operate in the past, because of the constant threat of war crimes claims against their actions. And one of the things that's become standard procedure within IDF operations is legal sign-off to each and every attack, each and every target that is hit has to have a lawyer, an IDF lawyer, sitting alongside the operations team, signing off every single attack. That's how things work today. And documentation, reams of documentation before the attacks are actually approved, all have to be gathered, put into a file, ready for a defense in the case that they might be brought to account at the International Criminal Court. Now, one of the things that Israel does have in its favor, which I think has not necessarily been recognized sufficiently by Fatou Bensouda, even though she did mention it, is the fact that there are internal investigations that go on in order to check out things that might have happened which are not according to standard. And even though she has mentioned it, I think that this is going to potentially play more of a role in the Karim Khan era as he takes over the International Criminal Court. So it's my hope that he's going to be pragmatic and say, let's pursue things which are really sort of an open and shut case, which are obvious, rather than trying to dip our toe in the water, try to test things out to see whether we can potentially get some sort of a prosecution. And I think in the case of the cases that are currently open against Israel, I think it's going to be enormously difficult for the court to prove its case.
Well, yeah, certainly we'll keep an eye on that story. Of course, staying with the courts, hearing in the Netanyahu trial has been delayed, but not as much as requested. What's the latest delay for?
So the Netanyahu team, the legal team, requested the court to delay the next hearings until after the Rosh Hashanah Chagim after holidays, really pushing the next hearing out towards October time rather than continuing now. They claim that there's been new evidence introduced that they need to consider in more detail, and they need more time to consider this, and they requested that things be postponed until after the high holidays. The court in the end decided to acknowledge or to agree to a postponement, but only for 3 weeks. So no postponement until October time, but rather a delay now for 3 weeks, and then the hearings will continue. So, you know, there's been this constant attempt to try to delay things, to play a long game where the court hearing is concerned. And even so, when we look at the number of witnesses that are being lined up by the prosecution to testify in this case, the case could literally go on for years, 2-3 years, in order to get everybody in through the door to have their say and to give their evidence. So the Netanyahu team has always trying to play a much longer game to try and delay things as much as possible. The court, to some degree, has been convinced on this occasion, not entirely, but still a little delay of 3 weeks that has been granted.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if there's the same virulence and the same focus now that on this trial now that he is out of office, or will that just sort of dissipate a little bit?
I would like to think that the fact that he's now out of office will give less excuses to delay things. There will be less reason why he shouldn't appear in court, why things shouldn't progress as usual. I mean, other people who might be held to account for their actions also have jobs and also work and things to do. Clearly, when you're the prime minister, there's a certain preference that's given to your responsibilities in office. Now that he doesn't have those responsibilities, I would like to think that the case will take get a little bit more momentum behind it.
Let's see what happens. And finally, May was a record-breaking month for mortgage taking in Israel. That's fascinating. Why?
It is, and it's a little counterintuitive. And actually, when you look at the way that things have been going in terms of the number of mortgages or the value of mortgages that have been taken in Israel, it's again, you know, doesn't really go with your intuition, because the last 3 months have each been record-breaking months, such that in the month of May, 9.5 billion shekels worth of mortgages were taken out. And this is 9% above the previous monthly record. Sorry, it wasn't the last 3 months, but actually the previous monthly record was set right in the middle of the corona period in March 2020, which again is a little counterintuitive. But it has become clear that mortgage taking has grown substantially over the past few months, and in particular young couples taking out mortgages. Apparently there are two main reasons why this has happened. The first of which is that there is just more flow in the market, a lot more properties changing hands. There have been certain programs introduced to try to encourage younger couples to be able to buy homes on slightly more attractive terms at slightly more attractive prices. One of the issues that young couples find themselves having to deal with in Israel is the massive cost of buying a property. People find it so difficult to get their foot onto that property ladder, and the government did introduce a number of programs in order to try and make it a little bit easier, and I think that those programs led to more mortgages being taken in general. Obviously, the price of property has continued to grow, and as the price of property continues to grow, the value of the mortgages continues to grow. But also, in tandem with all of that, it seems as if though the percentage of mortgage that is being taken as a percentage of the value of the property has also increased. So traditionally, you know, the rule of thumb in Israel has been that your mortgage shouldn't exceed 50% of the value of your property. And it seems as if though that percentage is growing just a little bit, which means that more mortgages are being taken. So more and more mortgages are being taken. Obviously, that's the banks are reasonably happy with that, and a lot of property being bought and sold at the moment across Israel.
I wonder if it's also the lack of pressure from outside of Israel, from foreigners buying property, because they haven't been able to travel to Israel.
Well, you know, if there was less demand from foreign buyers, then one would imagine that that might reduce the prices a little bit. But that's not been the case at all. And I think that the fact that people have been unable to travel here has not necessarily stopped people from wanting to buy. There are all kinds of alternative ways for people to view properties and to negotiate and to enter into deals if that's what they wish to do. So ironically, where the property market is concerned, we really haven't seen a major dip as a result of the corona period.
Really, really interesting. And Anthony Reich, unfortunately, that's where we do need to leave it. We'll catch you on Monday morning. I hope you have a fantastic weekend and a wonderful Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom.